Right, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And welcome to the Clay Travis Show. Welcome back. I'm Clay Travis. This is my host, my co-host, Slow Feet Dan. How you doing? This is how Clay Travis talks.
Are you getting Clay Travis? Are you getting Clay Travis confused with Cowherd?
We're this is me, Clay Travis, and we're here to discuss skull shape and how it affects Colin Kaepernick. Oh, just kidding. This is the HalfQuarter.com Power. I'm your host, Mitch Zachary Pump. My co-host, Dan Ford. How you doing, Dan?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. But if you've ever heard Clay Travis, Clay Travis is one of those guys who like puts on a fake deep voice to seem masculine. So it's like, hey everybody, I'm from the South. My daddy was a judge.
You see where he got robbed in Atlanta? His car got broken into, and it was. I've never been more proud of my city. Clay Travis should get robbed every time he comes to Atlanta.
I don't believe.
And not like in person. If his kids are with him, then fucking rob him in front of his kids. Fuck him. How about that?
Make sure they know their daddy's impotent and cannot do anything. That's good.
And a piece of shit. Yeah. But Dan, what a fucking weekend for college football. I mean, you know, I will say Saturday, not the funnest, you know, day at times, but Sunday and Monday delivered with three really good games. Well, let's kick back, though. Let's start with Thursday, and let's look at the big game. What did you think about Ohio State, Indiana? What were some thoughts?
Thoughts in order. Indiana has fully downloaded the system in that they're going to be good for a half and have no counterpunches. Yep. Offensively, like their offensive coordinator is capable of coming up with a decent game plan with no ability to deviate from it. I'm glad to know that guy hasn't changed anything. And JT Barrett's just trash. I don't think Kevin Wilson had a whole offseason to try to fix him. I don't think it's possible. If Kevin Wilson can't make you better at throwing the ball over the course of an offseason, you just suck. And that's all JT Barrett is going to be capable of, you know.
Yeah, but I think back to the thing, though, in Urban Meyer's system, you don't really need a guy who can throw it.
Well, it's not Urban Meyer's system. It's Kevin Wilson's system.
Well, it's still got touches of Urban Meyer in there.
And the reality is, as we learned last year, if they can't throw, they're not beating anybody elite. They could still win the Big Ten, maybe, but they didn't win it last year. But they could maybe, you know, I mean,
well,
Penn State.
But then, are you saying Michigan wasn't elite?
Michigan's offense was not elite last year, no. That's what sunk.
Okay,
that's what sunk.
They don't throw the ball. They don't throw the ball against an offense. They throw the ball against Michigan's defense, which was pretty elite. And
they
won that game.
They couldn't throw the ball against them.
But they ran the ball and won it. Sometimes you can just run the ball and win.
Sometimes, but eventually, over the course of a season, if you're going to win a national championship, you're gonna have to throw the ball at some point, and they can't.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I don't think anyone. I think everybody kind of thinks Ohio State's gonna push for maybe that fourth playoff spot. I still think they got it, you know. Like what I saw from Michigan, like I still see the same problem.
Michigan looked better than them. I'm sorry.
Their defense looks good. They still similar problems on offense, and we don't know who's better because we're found out the last week. That's how you know who's better, Dan. When you play,
Michigan will have the home field advantage in that game. I just had really high expectations for Ohio State, and they just did not meet those expectations whatsoever.
Yeah, things didn't look so great. Let's kind of jump over to Saturday. There's nothing really else that happened Thursday, right? I can't remember.
Army beat the shit out of Fordham on Friday night.
Oh, yeah.
Army just walked into New York City and left a smoldering crater where Fordham used to be. The ghost of Vince Lombardi was horrified at his alma mater.
So, that's all right. Let's jump down to Saturday. These were some of the bigger games. Who jumped out and really impressed you on Saturday? Which team were you like, I wasn't sure if they were that good, but this team looks like they're pretty damn good. I've got mine if you want me to go first.
Go for it.
Okay, I've been high on them, but they kind of proved it to me. LSU. I know they didn't win by
three.
Yeah. They shut out BYU, which has a pretty decent offense.
Yeah.
They're kind of known for good passing attack, and they dominated BYU, who's a decent mid-major, you know, probably a mid-major level team.
BYU is on the same level as a lot of power five. I mean, is BYU like a conference champion caliber team? No, but are they as good as like anybody in the Big 12 other than Oklahoma? Yeah.
I put BYU as like they could win the American.
Oh, no doubt. They could finish. Yeah. Like they could win the Big 12 with a couple of breaks. Like if Oklahoma sort of, you know, had an injury or something. You know, I mean, they could win the Big 12. They could. Yeah. They could win the Pac 12 with some lucky breaks. Yeah. They're a good team. So I mean,
that speaks more to what LSU did, and they're dominating. And LSU looked good. The offense looked a little bit better, not perfect. There's some kinks they're gonna have to work out, but they got time. They get time to really play Alabama. They get time to really play Auburn. I like that team. I felt a lot more confident in my pick of LSU after watching that BYU game.
Yeah, they looked really good in that game. There's no doubt about that.
A game where I think I took BYU catching all them points. So I mean, they covered pretty damn well. So was there a similar team to you, Dan, that maybe you picked to do well, but once you saw them, you put a lot more confidence in the pick?
South Carolina. South Carolina going into the season, I picked them to win the SEC East. That was almost a joke, just because I think the SEC East is such hot trash. But I thought they played very well against NC State, a good NC State team. It's a good NC State team. And their offense moved the ball. They did, you know, they were able to score 35 points. They did what they needed to do. I was impressed with them. I thought very highly of their performance.
Right. Is there anything else on Saturday that jumped out at you? We can talk about, you know, Florida looked bad, but I think we both kind of called that. I think we called exactly how that game would go, where Florida's defense looked pretty good, and then the offense just let them down completely.
Yeah, I mean, Florida has almost completely, and it was funny to hear Michigan people point this out, because, like, they immediately recognized it. They have completely recreated the Brady Hoke era Michigan Wolverines. They have a mediocre coach that nobody can who was hired from the Mountain West that nobody can really understand how he got the job. Their offense is a disorganized mess that can't do anything. Their defense is really good but constantly gives up in the second half. You know, is incapable of playing a whole game because eventually they kind of don't have much of guts. They don't have much heart. They don't have fighting spirit. I mean, I know it sucks to have your offense be terrible, but, you know, I mean, that doesn't really give you an excuse to just give up in the second half of games like Florida constantly does.
Yeah.
And
but to be fair, and I want to just be fair that Florida defense is really good. Well, I think if you took that Florida defense and you put it on a team that struggles on if you can combine that Florida defense with, say, a team with a pretty good offense but a bad D – that's an elite level team. But they get tired again. I think that's fair to say when you're on the field a lot.
I'm not a huge fan of Randy Shannon as their defensive coordinator, though. Like, they did a lot of, like, I think they're a team that has a ton of talent on defense, but I'm not sure they're being used optimally. Because they didn't even have a force player on outside runs. Like, Michigan just kept bouncing all of their runs outside because Florida had nobody out there to keep everybody in. That's just, like, dumb. And that's going to be fine against Vanderbilt because, like, Vanderbilt has no talent, and you can do dumb crap and still blow them up with your talent. But, like, they're going to play LSU, and they're going to give up 40 points.
No, I mean, and even when they play, like, a team less, even when they run into a Georgia, you know, you're going to have a Sonny Michel running all over your ass.
I mean, it's just
– you know, when you run into these teams with better running backs, I think we'll kind of see that. But I thought the defense, you know.
I mean, it's got good talent, but I mean, even that has weaknesses.
Yeah, Florida's going to really need to nail their next hire, much like how Michigan did. You're going to have to nail your next hire big time. Is there anybody else? I'm going to spend one hot minute. I thought Auburn looked great. I don't know if you saw any of that game, Dan. I know they're playing a bad Southern team, but sometimes it's important to dominate the bad teams to make sure you are a good team.
Speaking of Georgia Southern, mark this down if you can go lay this prop bet out on somebody. First Division 1A FBS program to fire their coach, lay a bet on Georgia Southern.
Yeah.
He may not make it to the middle of the season. It's going to be a race between him and Sumlin.
Yeah, once they enter conference play at Masters, that's when the heat's really going to turn on for Southern. Anybody else from Saturday that jumped out? I mean, I thought
Purdue.
I'll tell you what.
Purdue. Yeah, Purdue. My boy Jeff Brohm. You didn't even want to talk about Purdue when we did our Big Ten preview.
Yeah.
You just wanted to blow past them.
Indiana football is back, you know, in the state, especially for playing good for a half and losing at the end.
I mean, I think Purdue got screwed, though. Like, Purdue was a better team than Louisville that day. The refs screwed them over. Like, they had, like, three targeting calls, and all of them were garbage. Like, they got hosed. They were better than Louisville. That's not the case with Indiana and Ohio State. Like, Ohio State eventually just got their mess together and just started beating up a bad team.
Once again, though, Jeff, I think Louisville won that game because they had the best player on the field. And Jackson looked great.
He did look awesome, but the referees had a hand in that. I just want to know, does Jeff Brohm make it to year two at Purdue, or does Florida, you know, show up at his door?
Start licking those lips. Another team that impressed, they lost Eason, but I think Georgia gained from Eason getting hurt. From however we want to pronounce it, I don't care. Looks to be like a much better quarterback than Eason. I know he didn't look perfect, but he's a true freshman. I thought he looked really good, and this is the guy for Georgia. If Georgia's going to win the East, you got to roll with Fromm.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of my reasoning for picking South Carolina instead of Georgia to win the East was based on the idea that I just don't think Eason's any good. I think he's like the classic everybody falling in love with a guy because he has a strong arm, but, you know, he's shown zero aptitude at his position.
Yeah. Well, the other issue, too, Dan, is it's pretty easy to look good in, what, 3A ball in Washington.
Yeah, I never really trust dudes who either play in some little tiny high school, but they have a strong arm, because it's like, I mean, the way this gimmick works, if you've got a kid who shows a lot of aptitude at sports, you kind of move to where all the good coaches are. You know?
Yeah, especially now, the only case has to be a guy with, like, raw athleticism. Then I'm like, you know, because you can't fake athleticism. But with Eason, it's like, of course you look good at quarterback when your DBs are running 5.240s.
Yeah.
Like,
You got a bunch of kids looking like me and you playing safety, and it's just like, oh boy, you're torching us.
And by comparison, Fromm played in one of the biggest, you know, one of the bigger high schools in Georgia, in one of the best states for high school talent. He's playing the best. He's playing guys that are going to Alabama, that are going even to Ohio State, to FSU, to Miami. He's playing the best. And
to be the man, really you got to be the man.
That, yeah, and I think some of the thing is the speed of the game. It's obviously faster in college football, but it wasn't as big of a leap for Fromm as it was for Eason, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me specifically of I know I always come across like a Michigan homer. I know nothing about Michigan. I'm not from Michigan. But, like, last year they recruited a kid who was, like, the best quarterback in the history of the state of New Mexico. And after about a half of his first season, they moved him to tight end. Because while he was really awesome in high school at quarterback, he basically was just a big, strong kid who was, like, 6'5", and he could throw the ball a million yards, and he was the best athlete in the entire state. And, like, he really didn't have to know – he didn't have to read defenses of any kind. He really didn't have to know anything about how to play the quarterback position. He was just, I'm a huge guy with a strong arm who's really fast. And, like, it didn't take long before Michigan figured out, oh, he's never going to play quarterback. And they moved him to tight end, and this year he's playing pretty well for him. I mean, yeah. I look at Eason, and I just see a big, tall kid with a strong arm who's never really had to think that hard about football.
I look at Eason and I say, this is a kid that I think would hope he can get a medical red shirt, and then he should go ahead and start talking to Coach Rick in Miami. I think that's the only way you fix your career for Eason. You got to go down. You got to let Mark Rick coach you up. Because I think that's who recruited him originally, and I think Mark Rick is probably one of the few coaches at a major program who could get something out of Eason, because he is a good
coach. Petrino.
That's special.
Petrino could get something out of him. Because Petrino, like, who was that kid who played for Arkansas, who's like the world's biggest dumbass? But he had he was like 6'6", and he could sling a ball through a truck.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh God, he was a Michigan kid who transferred when Rich Rodriguez got hired.
Yeah.
Oh man, move on. I'll figure out his name here in a little bit.
Yeah, but regardless, you know, if I'm Eason, I'm looking to transfer to like a school like that, a school with a coach who knows how to develop a quarterback. Because your issue, if you're Eason, was, yeah, you didn't play anyone in high school, but you're going to have Mark Rick coach you. He's a pretty damn good quarterback, especially a pretty damn good college quarterback's coach. You got to go find a coach who's similar to that.
Ryan Mallett.
That's right. Ryan, former Patriot Ryan Mallett. Even the NFL gave him a shot. But
I want to just point Eason, out, though, gotta, I want to point out that I Googled Arkansas quarterbacks, and across the top it had, like, Google image results. And Mitch Mustaine was at the top, at the far corner, and his number one Google image picture is him in the woods wearing plaid holding a gun. And I do not understand.
What about Matt Jones, cocaine cowboy?
A legend.
Great Arkansas quarterback. I guess suspended from the NFL for for cocaine use. I think we can throw the legend there. Anything else before we jump to Sunday and like where the really fun game started? Anything else from Saturday that kind of jumped out to you?
Let's see. I mean, let's see. I would say, did we talk about Maryland, Texas yet?
No, I want to get that back in kind of the segment we're gonna do next.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That pretty much does it for me. Yeah.
Okay. Let's jump to Sunday now. These were two awesome games, right? Like we had one of the greatest, I think the second greatest comeback in college history. But West Virginia, Virginia Tech was a pretty fun game.
Oh God, and it was a much better game to watch.
Yeah.
Like from until beginning the fourth. To end. Yeah. Like the UCLA Texas A&M game was, you know, basically like watching a snuff film, and then it turned into a
until
different
about
kind
the fourth
of,
quarter.
And then it turned into a different kind of snuff film.
Until like the one guy who was like gambling on it, I think, was like, "Y'all need to change it back over here on Twitter." And I think that's when everyone ran back to that game. But yeah, I thought, you know, UCLA is talented. They shouldn't have been down by that much. I think we saw my issues with A&M. They have no heart. There's no soul to that team.
It's a gutless team. It is a gutless team that has tried to put like flash and swag as a replacement for like
grit.
Giving a shit about what you, I don't want to say grit because that makes it sound racial, but like it's like trying to like, hey, we've got memes and we're harem. Like it's just like the dumbest bull crap. Like, hashtag recruiting in place of just like, hey, we like work hard and try to get good at anything. Like we like actually want to be successful at something. Like it's just,
but how good, I want to talk about the performance of Rosen real quick. That looked like an NFL quarterback to me, especially the way you handled that last drive with the fake spike.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I mean, Josh, the saddest thing about UCLA and the reason why Jim Moore is also going to end up fired is that he's had this kid for, like, what, 3 years now, and they haven't done squat with him?
No, it's, like, I think a lot of people, it's one of the most talented teams you'll see all year that wins seven games.
Like, Josh Rosen, you know, that's just, Josh Rosen is going to be the one, is probably going to be, like, the biggest star in the NFL in, like, 4 years.
Yeah, because the kid just showed a lot of cool, and you got to like that. Let's jump back to Virginia Tech, West Virginia. I think both these teams are pretty damn good. That was kind of my takeaway, like, obviously, Va Tech wins, but West Virginia looked pretty good.
Yeah, I'm not sure how good Virginia Tech is, though, because they're still replacing a lot of people and getting a lot of guys into a different system.
Yeah, well, I think they kind of, like, we'll talk about it in our next segment, but it looked like they were kind of back to doing some Beamer ball stuff, and I like that a lot. That,
yeah.
But we saw some special team, we saw defense make plays. Really enjoyed that. We'll get back to them in a second, Dan. I want to jump now, Monday's game.
Do we have to?
I believe the third. It might have been like the fifth or sixth college football game overall in Atlanta that weekend, if we count the smaller schools and the HBUs and everything. But that's Georgia Tech, Tennessee. Have you ever seen a team rush for 500 yards and lose a game?
I can't say that I have. I still cannot believe Georgia blew that game. Or Georgia Tech blew that game. I still can't believe it.
Yeah, that's... I understand there were a couple, and they could have won. If you
and they won. They had the game won. That fumble, if that fumble doesn't happen, they win, period.
Yeah. But even when they go for two, I mean, it was there if he kind of cuts it to the outside a little
bit. If he pitches, it's there. If he pitches sooner.
Yeah, if he pitches, that's right, yeah. So, like, there are steps away from winning. I would be a little concerned as a Tech fan, though, just when you blow a lead like that, it can get in your head.
Yeah.
And football is a mental game. I'm concerned, but I want to see how Tech responds before I, like, put, you know, any label
the,
on them.
The most,
Tennessee, you know what?
The most frustrating thing, though, for Georgia Tech is how their defense just collapsed. And there's not a good reason for it. There wasn't a good reason why Tennessee was able to start scoring and, like, hit, like having a pass and then a receiver, like, just shrugs off four tackles and runs it into the end zone. There's not a good reason why that happened because their defense wasn't tired. Their offense held the ball for, like, 3 hours.
Yeah.
Like, there was no reason for their defense to be making those kind of, like, major mistakes on key plays. That just,
but I will say, Dan, I don't think Tennessee's a good team. Was impressed they hung in and didn't give up, because that's an issue that we've seen with Tennessee, kind of, under, you know, under Butch Jones and all these other things. So that is a gleaming, besides the win, obviously, if you're a Tennessee fan. I think the other hope is this team hung around when they're getting their asses kicked and didn't give up. That matters.
Yeah, but they had some horseshoe wins like that last year, too. Like, you know, and they had the Georgia game. Yeah, it's like Tennessee, the way their offense is set up still doesn't make any damn sense. Because it's basically like, let's just run straight up the middle with no threat of our quarterback keeping the ball whatsoever. Like, I think their quarterback had one keeper last night. And, like, the offensive the announcers basically, like, crapped their pants. Like, oh, my God, it was a keeper. You know, it's just like their offense is so predictable. And then when they get down, they just start winging it all over the field. And it's just such, like, their offense only works if they have, like, the most luck possible. And it still just doesn't make sense to me. Like, what they do offensively does not add up to me. It does not seem sustainable. Everything about them.
But you know what? Tennessee could be one of those teams that maybe wins the East, and we're just confused as to why.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
I had a prediction for Tennessee, you'll be very confused by the end of the year. One way or another, Tennessee is going to baffle us. Let's jump to our next segment, Dan. Who's back? Who's not? I'll start off. Texas football, back to being mediocre.
Right? Yep, Texas football is definitely back to being what they've been for the last 6 years.
Yeah. Hyped up for a couple of months, and it's pretty clear that Herman's got a lot of work to do. And we talked about this pre-show, but a lot of those issues were coaching and discipline errors for Texas. That's something you think Herman maybe would have fixed. And it's not like Strong was a player's coach either. He's kind of a hard-head, military type of coach. So what's wrong with Texas? What's the matter in Texas?
I mean, it makes you go, is there something systemic about Texas football? Look, Texas people, if there's any Texas fan listening to this, they're going to get pissed off when I say this, but that team ain't been worth a damn since the Longhorn Network started.
Yeah.
And it just – and I – you know, that might be like causation and, oh, it's correlation, not causation, whatever that bullshit thing that math people say is. You know, maybe there's something, you know, maybe they're right. But I have a hard time not thinking that the entitlement that comes from having this network that's all about you and a coach who has to go do like 4 hours of interviews a day for, you know, for ESPN to fill time on the network. And, you know, a locker room that has gold-plated TVs over the
locker. No, what was each locker? Each locker was what, like, more than the median income of an American family, basically?
Basically, yeah. That's
like, borderline offensive.
Like, that doesn't lead to a sense that, oh, well, we're Texas. What do we have to work hard for?
No, you know what, Dan? You know what it kind of reminds me of, in a way? And maybe they've been the whole time, but I think Texas is Notre Dame in the South. A school that... maybe time has passed them by a little bit. They don't know it. Like, they might be the dad still wearing the members-only jacket in 1989, thinking it looks cool, and he doesn't. Like, Texas isn't the cool program anymore.
No.
When I look at it, you have all this fancy stuff and all this stuff around you, but you're not what you were. And that kind of reminds me of Notre Dame, a team that thinks a lot more of themselves than what they really are.
Yeah, I can see that. It's just, like, if Tom Herman fails there, we know Tom Herman's a good coach. Like, we saw what he did at Houston. We saw how good, like, basically Ohio State's offense hasn't been worth a flip since he went to Houston. Like, Ohio State's offense has never recovered from him leaving. Like, we know he can coach. We knew, I mean, you know, some people want to say, oh, Charlie Strong couldn't handle the Texas job. But, like, Charlie Strong was a really good coach for a long time and never had discipline problems, specifically. Like, his program never had, like, anybody who ever, like, coached alongside Charlie Strong would tell you, the last thing you would ever worry about is his team's not being disciplined. Like, at what point do we start to look up and go, there's something wrong at the University of Texas? Because you can't have, like, all these, like, okay, I can believe that Mack Brown got old and sort of checked out and football passed him by. I could believe that maybe Charlie Strong couldn't handle the Texas job. I can't believe that, like, okay, Mac Brown became an idiot. Charlie Strong doesn't know how to coach at a big school. And Tom Herman can't handle this job. Like, all three of those guys can't all be bad.
Yeah. To quote former President George W. Bush, you fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, can't get fooled again. And I think that's what we're seeing in Texas, where if Herman fails, this is tech, and it's similar to Notre Dame. It's on the program to figure out how to fix itself and reinvent itself, and maybe take a look in the mirror and say, hey, we're not as good as we thought we were.
Yeah,
Notre Dame kind of did, and that's when Notre Dame was able to make it back to a national championship.
Yeah, if Tom Herman doesn't work out there, then it's time to just, like, completely remake the entire athletic department from the ground up.
Yeah, I think the next head that will roll there, if Herman doesn't work, will be a lot of people in the athletic department. My guess. Let's jump another team. Are they back? Let's start with this one. We did talk about this game earlier. Alabama. Alabama's back, Dan. They are back,
yeah.
And I think we were wrong. This team's probably going to dominate everybody.
I still think UCLA beats them. Yeah. I still believe in UCLA. But, I mean, this team, the defense is absolutely just as good. Their running game is absolutely just as good. Their quarterback, their play action passing game is great. So, yeah. But I still have questions if you're able to get an early lead on them. Like, basically, Alabama is like the world's strongest turtle. If they knock them on their back, I still think they're screwed. But boy,
can they flip around and get back up?
Can't flip around, yeah. But boy, God help you trying to flip them.
Yeah, but you know what? Thing with this Alabama team too is at some point I think we're gonna have to stop assuming these turnovers are lucky. They're more creative from just incredible playmaking talent that they get. Because we see it, you know, we see whether it's, you know, getting a turnover on special teams or getting a big interception, you know, when a team's looking like it's ready to score. It's what Alabama does really well. And I think last year both me and you, Dan, thought maybe that's a little bit more luck. Now I'm starting to think no team's this lucky. Luck's bullshit. They're making things
happen. Turnovers, I still think are luck. You can create turnover opportunities. You can create opportunities for turnovers. You cannot create turnovers.
This is the team that creates great opportunities because they want to get great pass rush. And when you have playmakers at every position in the backfield on defense. It's a scary team.
But special teams is definitely a thing you can create.
Yeah. And special teams is something, you know, we saw a 1,000-yard running back from last year block a punt. These guys are all in, too. That's like we talk about Texas and these other schools where maybe players don't look like they're really into it. These guys at Alabama are into it, and I think they're pretty pissed they lost to Clemson last year. And a lot more of those guys returned than I think we're giving Alabama credit for.
They
brought back a lot of guys.
They still can't come back because their quarterback isn't that good.
No, we'll see. I mean, they did come back against Ole Miss. The thing is, it depends on what team's going to get that lead on them and if that team can run the ball and run down the clock against them. Because it could be a situation that we saw with A&M where it's just, if you can't run the ball, you can't win the game.
Yeah.
And you have a big lead.
I just don't – I can't see Hurts ever being able to do what Rosen did. He's just not that kind of passer.
No, I don't think any other quarterback could do that. But if it's, you know, 10 points in the third you got to come back with, Alabama, the way they create turnovers, the way they make things happen, the playmakers you have on special teams, hell, their special teams is better than most, you know, most mid-major starting schools, the guys Bama has play in on special teams. So they can create their own destiny, basically, if you're Alabama. Even if you give a big lead, you've got a team that can create magic, make magic happen. I'm scared of this Bama team. This Bama team, Dan, might go undefeated.
They could.
I didn't think.
They
called this
could.
A two-loss team.
I just can't see them going a whole season without ending up in a hole at some point. I just don't see that.
Yeah. And let's talk about this next team, the team they could have in a hole with. LSU. LSU's back, baby.
LSU's back.
Feeling good about this pick.
Yeah, I feel really good about LSU. Like, they just they look like they're going to just be – just an utter mess to try to play. Like, just,
yeah.
Like, oh God, horror. Just the horror.
Yeah, and now that they know what they're doing on offense, like, you didn't see a lot of, like we talked about with Mr. Cheese, a lot of pitch ISOs up the middle. You saw a different, We saw, like, a very different offense from not that far. Like, it's not like Canada made his guys do too much that was different from what LSU was doing in the past, but he added some more wrinkles. And I'm excited to see what he does as the season progresses and as these guys learn about the offense more. That's what I'm interested in, Dan. I want to see LSU evolve. LSU week one looked good, but how are they going to look week five? Is this offense going to get better, or is it going to kind of stay where it is now? That's the big key to me for LSU, and if they can contend for a national championship, that's the goal.
Yeah, and then they still look like a team that could contend.
Let's go 2-for-1 on our next one. Looks like FSU is not back. Maybe FSU is back to not being contender, but is Clemson back, Dan? I think we'll talk about Clemson's game this week a little bit later. But Clemson looked really good against a bad team, obviously, but they look dominant.
Yeah, I mean they haven't fallen apart. Clemson is still a team you're gonna have to worry about.
Yeah, you didn't lose a lot on defense. You didn't lose a ton on offense. You just lost your best player, obviously. But it looks like this kid replacing Watson might be pretty damn good. I think even me forgot that Clemson still recruits really well. And just because you lose a Deshaun Watson doesn't mean they can't reload and get a quarterback who's maybe a step down but still really damn good.
Yeah, and Clemson has shown an ability to develop quarterbacks. Like people now forget Taj Boyd, but it wasn't like Watson was the first good quarterback Clemson had had, you know, in the Dabo Swinney era. Like, you know, they had Taj Boyd before him. So, like, Clemson has shown an ability to develop talent at that position, and I don't see any reason to believe that they're going to suddenly not be able to anymore.
Yeah, I think we'll learn a lot more about Clemson. Let's jump to another team, Dan. Your boys, NC State, you're back to sucking, right?
Well, I think South Carolina's pretty good, so I'm not sure I'm willing to go there. But, yeah, I mean, any hope. I mean, there's, like, that one dude who said that NC State's going to make the playoff. Well, that's off the table.
Who? Was that Coins?
No, it was a guy on ESPNU.
Let's talk about this team. A team that Wes was very high on last week didn't look so high. Is Washington back? Being the Washington we're used to.
Well, I will say this about Rutgers. Jerry Kill is now their offensive coordinator, and Jerry Kill apparently spent the entire offseason with Bill Snyder. And you could tell, because Rutgers was running that Bill Snyder offense where it's like everything's out of the shotgun, so it kind of looks like a modern offense, but it's all just like inverted veer, and let's take 40 seconds off the clock every single play. It was just but Rutgers has a sense of competence to them that they have not had as a Big Ten school.
Yeah, Rutgers came out fighting hard. I think they said this is a statement. And, you know, they lost, but I think they made a statement. I think, another school did too. We'll talk about in a second. But I think Rutgers is trying to say, hey, we're tired of being the laughing stock. You might beat us, but we're going to come out, we're going to kick your ass too. And I think that's going to be big for Rutgers. Let's talk about another team in the Big Ten that kind of impressed a lot of people, Maryland. Maryland's back, right? This is their biggest win since the Fridge era.
This is the first time they've beaten a ranked team in 17 games.
Yeah.
Against ranked opponents. So, yeah, I mean, the thing is that their offense just look. I mean, the thing about Maryland is that they lost like 3 or 4 defensive players in that game to injury, so this might all fall apart, you know, just based on, like, they don't have enough talent to handle losing all those guys to injury, but their offense is legit. Like, their offense, it is a shotgun run heavy, and you got to deal with that play action when it comes, and good luck to you, offense. I mean,
I feel kind of dumb after our Big Ten preview and watching that game, because I think, like I said about, I think Maryland's a school, I think those seniors are tired of being the laughing stock, and they may not win a ton of games, but I think they're going to play a lot harder and play teams a lot closer. And this win over Texas, that's a big confidence boost. And if I'm the Big Ten, I'm not scared of Maryland. I'm a little worried, though, when I got to play a bigger team the next week. If I'm Ohio State, got a big game next week, but I got to play Maryland this week, I'm going to be a little bit more scared of Maryland now. The team that's shown some teeth.
Well, you know who's,
you know, maybe not even beat you, but a team that can maybe make you look.
Well, you know who should really be scared? And that's Michigan State. Because Michigan State might be the worst team in the Big Ten now.
Who was that loss to, Dan? I don't have that in front of me. It was not a good opening week for Michigan State.
Yeah, Michigan State beat Bowling Green, but Bowling Green may be the worst team in Division I FBS. And Bowling Green's quarterback basically is worse than me and you. Because he had five separate deep balls where his receivers just beat the – just were wide – when I say wide open, I mean they completely clowned Michigan State's coverage, and he couldn't hit them. I mean, he finished 10 for 31, I believe, or 10 for 38. He only had 10 completions. And if he was even remotely competent, he would have had at least 25. Because Michigan State couldn't cover anybody. I mean, this Michigan State team is going to get absolutely shredded by everybody in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
They looked worse than any other team in the Big Ten because, hey, Rutgers played Washington close for a half. Purdue should have beat Louisville. We're a better team than Louisville. Had a bunch of bad breaks to end up losing that game. Maryland beat Texas, so obviously they're not going to be the worst team in the conference. You know, it's looking terrible.
Even a school like Indiana put up a good fight against Ohio State.
Yeah, Indiana, has been. I mean, Indiana's been decent for the past few years. They don't look like they're going to totally collapse in year one.
Yeah,
Michigan State may finish last in the conference.
This is a program, mind you, Dan, that 4 years ago? No, I'm sorry.
They made the playoff.
Playoffs 3 years ago. That's right. So when we look back at it, is this one of the worst collapses you've seen for a program in recent memory?
The only thing I can even remotely think of, and it's really not comparable, would be like Georgia Tech in the 90s. Like they won the national championship in 91 or in 90, and they hired, you know, their coach left for the NFL, Bobby Ross. They replaced him with East Carolina's coach, and like he went 5-7 the year after they won the national title. But like that Georgia team really hadn't been good for years in a row like Michigan State had. Like that Georgia Tech team was basically like a 6-6 team that caught lightning in a bottle 1 year and won a national championship.
Yeah, it was like the equivalent of like an NFL team that goes to the Super Bowl 1 year and then like
basically like the 98 Atlanta Falcons team, only they actually ended up winning. And yeah. You're just like the Dirty Bird Falcons.
Well, kind of. They shared a national championship, so.
They should have won. I mean, they should have won it undisputed. Colorado.
We don't share things in America, Dan. That's for socialists.
Colorado lost that game where they got the fifth down. That should have been bullcrap.
But Dan, who did you? What's one team that you said this program's back? Your back base. One that we haven't mentioned yet.
I mean, LSU would have been my team, but we already talked about them. Because
I got one more. I got a surprise one.
Hit me.
Iowa.
Iowa's definitely back to being Iowa.
Yeah. Wyoming came in. I think a lot of people.
Myself included.
Wyoming might win that game.
I lost a lot of money on that.
Me too. I picked Wyoming. I lost money on that. If it wasn't for Tech covering, this weekend would have really sucked. But they did. But Iowa thought they came in and they held, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in the nation to 3 points. Pretty damn good.
Yeah, might have hurt his NFL. Might have hurt his little NFL. Ooh,
He's still Tolin White, Dan. He's gonna get taken in the top 10. And there was really no other schools that had a big test to me that showed me like, hey, this program is back. One of them in a circle. They don't really play a big game until they run into FSU. I want to say in 2 weeks from now. Miami's one I'm circling. I'm looking at, and they go to Arkansas State next week. That's going to be an interesting game.
Well, you know who's definitely not back, even though we spent all offseason talking about them?
Who's that, Dan?
USC, who spent literally 3.5 quarters playing neck and neck with a PJ Fleckless Western Michigan. And to be fair, PJ Fleck spent years upgrading Western Michigan's talent. Western Michigan has had better recruiting classes than, like, half of the Big Ten. So, yeah. Fair enough. But
Dan, I know, like, you're super
USC played like crap against the MAC team.
They did. But here's my gleaming hope for USC when I look at it. Like, a USC team from 2 years ago would have lost that game. At least they came back, they won, and they blew them out.
At least they didn't completely shame themselves.
Yeah. Well, that's what makes me think, well, maybe there's something. You know, USC's going to be a team that's going to evolve and grow. We're going to see. We're going to learn what they are next week for sure. Because even if they lose to Stanford, if they lose to Stanford by three, eh, maybe it's still a decent team. Stanford stomps them. We'll learn what USC is and how much heart they have. But I think I'm not going to make a judge on USC until next week. I think that's fair.
I think after an off season of hearing about how they were a national championship favorite, even though they didn't even win, you know, even though they didn't even win their conference last
I think they
year.
Are a favorite to go to the playoffs, but I think that's
no, they're not a favorite.
They are a favorite maybe to win their conference.
No, they're
champion.
Not.
Yes,
not until they beat
they
somebody like Stanford or Washington. No, they're not. They
no,
didn't even
Dan,
win their division last year.
They're,
they got to beat Colorado
one,
first.
Dan, they're one of the favorites.
Okay. Well, if
now, it doesn't mean that you're the only team. It just means you're that handful of teams that people think could win the Pac-12. They have a better chance of winning the Pac-12 than, say, Utah or Cal.
Maybe.
They are a favorite.
They're not.
That's
I mean,
true. That's just true, Dan. That's
they're not.
You may
a,
not
I mean,
like it.
If we make favorite to be you're in the top half of a 12-team conference, well, great.
No, but they're in the top four.
Maybe. Maybe.
Who's better besides Washington?
Stanford, Washington. I mean, Washington State looked pretty good.
Washington State did look good. I want to see more from Washington State. We're going to learn more
from Washington Colorado? State. I mean, you got to beat them first. They ain't beat
you know what? We didn't mention that. Everyone was very high on Colorado State. Even you and me, I think, were after last
yeah.
weekend. Colorado State's not very good.
Well, Colorado might
not
be
as good
really
as
good. Colorado just might be really good.
Yeah. Colorado might be that's the team I'm worrying about.
I mean, they're the defending South Division champions, and everybody spent all offseason going, yeah, let's talk about USC, this team they beat last
year.
Well,
no one, Dan, let's be fair, no one wants to talk about Colorado. Colorado.
Shit, UCLA
boring,
and Josh Rosen.
They're one of
Josh
the most
Rosen
boring teams.
Josh Rosen pitching that ball around. UCLA
well,
looks better
know.
Than USC.
Well, you forget this, Dan, that UCLA's coached by the Jeff Fisher of the NCAA football, and that's Jim Moore. Is that a fair comparison? That's something I saw over the weekend. I want to talk about that real quick. Is Jim Moore the Jeff Fisher of college football? And if he's not, who do you think is the Jeff Fisher?
Kirk Ferentz.
Ooh.
Kirk Ferentz is the Jeff Fisher of the NCAA.
I think he's more successful than Jeff Fisher.
Well, because you have to adjust. You have to adjust in yeah. like in college football, if you went 6-6 every year, you would get fired. You have like the minimum to be like to be safe in your job is like 8-4. And Kirk Ferentz basically has averaged 8-4 for like 25 years. And and like Jeff Fisher for most of his career, obviously things at the end with the Rams, they became like actually like outright bad. But for most of Jeff Fisher's career, it was our defense is good, not great. Our offense is not really good, but they can run the ball. And so that's a good enough formula to, like, make the playoffs every other year. Which, I mean, look at Iowa. They never recruit well. They always play excellent cover two defense. You never score big plays on them. And then they run outside zone. and they get, like, 4 yards a play. They either run outside zone or they run, like, quick outs or a slant. And then that's their offense. And there's nothing exciting. They're basically the college football equivalent of eating oatmeal. But by golly, they always win 8 games. You can set your watch by Iowa.
I think that's a fair comparison. Are you ready to jump now into week 2? To me, Dan, this is like, I know we hyped up FSU Alabama is the biggest opening game, whatever bullshit. This might be the best week 2 in the history of college football.
Oh, boy.
I mean, we're looking at least 3 games that could define the playoff picture this early.
Ooh. Ooh. Excitement.
Yeah. That's exciting. So let's get started. Let's look at some odds. We'll be using odds, Dan, from the MGM Mirage today. So if you went to Vegas, you went to the Mirage, you're going to place a bet, this is the numbers you'd see. If you did it today on a Tuesday. Let's start with the big team from last week. UCLA is a 23-point favorite over Hawaii. Do they cover that game?
Yes. Yes, Hawaii's not even
good. I think the most Jim Moore thing to do is to follow up that performance with a dumb almost loss to a bad Hawaii team.
But Hawaii's just not any good. Just
No, but give me Hawaii in the points. Let's just roll with it. We'll see what happens. Next up, we're going to look at Nebraska and Oregon. Talk about two teams that have fallen off, Dan.
What's the spread on that one?
That's going to be, I just lost my place somehow, 13 for Oregon.
13? Oh, no, give me the points. Yeah, Oregon's defense gave up like 24 points last weekend. I don't buy that they can cover that kind of spread. Because eventually,
this is my lock of the
you gotta get some stops to cover a double digit point spread.
Here's my pick, my lock of the week. Michigan State's favored by 7.5 versus Western Michigan.
Oh my god!
Western Michigan wins that game outright.
Sell your house and bet it on Western Michigan. Sell your babies into sex slavery. Do whatever you gotta do to have the money to bet on that game.
Okay, how about this one, Dan? This is one of those weird bets you can take. Would you take this one? Alabama favored by 43.5 versus Fresno State. Are they going to beat Fresno State by 50? I don't know if that Alabama team's good enough to score that many points.
Oh, they're definitely good enough to score that many points on Fresno.
No, good enough to score that many. Maybe that's not
right.
It's
just like Nick Saban tends to just turn late into games into like a gum fest.
He likes to get his third streak. Like, he's not a guy. Saban's, like, not a Spurrier type, in my opinion. He's not a guy who just wants to blow you out for fun. He doesn't care because he's one of those guys getting hurt. He's too big of a dick to have fun like Spurrier that way.
See, he may not even try and beat Fresno by 50. Fresno is a broken program. That is a mess.
Yeah, big mess.
I'm giving you those points. You can have them.
And be honest, besides...
I'm staying away from that game, but... For the purposes of discussion, because I have balls of steel. You can have them points.
Let's talk about this one on the new CBS. Gary Danielson, and who's replacing my boy Vern?
I didn't catch their first game.
No, well it's next week. I forgot who they got somebody from ESPN. I can't remember who.
McDonough?
Well, I don't remember. You know, I thought it was like Herb Street or something. That's not right. No, it's one of those white guys.
Okay. I'll find out. You keep talking.
Yeah, yeah. This game, though, the first game on the new CBS, Arkansas and TCU. TCU favored by 3.5. Give me Arkansas here. I think Arkansas wins. TCU, good team, but this is in Arkansas. Arkansas needs a big win. I think they get it here.
I'm going to go with Texas Christian, and I'm going to do it for this one reason. When Bert first showed up at Arkansas, and as we talked about, recruiting the state of Texas is the most important lifeblood for any coach who's coaching at the University of Arkansas. He made a statement to the high school coaches of Texas that if your team doesn't have a fullback, we're going to kick their ass. And ever since then, teams from the state of Texas playing Arkansas have relished showing up to beat Bert's ass. And Texas, and you don't need to do much to get Gary Patterson fired up. I think Texas Christian is going to defend the state of Texas and beat that ass. I really do.
We got to check on who that new announcer is.
Okay.
Placing Vern. While you do that, let's jump now.
It's Brad Nessler.
Brad Nessler. That's who I couldn't remember his name, but yeah. I'm excited to hear that combo. I'm going to miss Vern, though.
Brad Nessler is the most CBS. He was the most CBS guy working for ESPN.
Yeah. Well, Dan, you want to hear my other prediction I have? I think they add a third man next year. I think Kenny Sumlin's going to be on CBS next year as a comment. He's not going to work in studio. He'll be a great color guy. I got Sumlin going to CBS. That's my big prediction. Let's jump to our main event games. Let's start at 7 o'clock on ESPN. Auburn travels to Clemson. Clemson's favored by 5.5. I don't think Auburn wins outright, but I think Auburn can lose by a field goal. That's what they did last year to a better Clemson team.
That feels weird to me, Clemson being favored by that much. That feels like a three, home team gets three, and that's it.
I think this is one that you'll probably see the action change by the weekend.
Yeah, I'm taking Auburn with that line.
Yeah, I'm looking at the over-under. It's sitting around 53, 54, liking that over.
Yeah,
kind of doing that little
shot
dance where I'm shaking my butt. Gotta be excited. Let's talk about this one. Georgia travels to Notre Dame. Notre Dame favored by 6.5, 4.5. It's gonna be around that range.
That's too much.
Give me Georgia.
Give me
Georgia wins that game outright. Yeah, I think Georgia wins that game outright. I think they're probably a better team than Notre Dame.
I wouldn't say that. I think Notre Dame's a better team, but that's too many points.
I don't know if Notre Dame's a better team.
I do. I feel pretty confident about that. But
we'll see.
I don't feel so confident about it that I'm willing to give them almost a touchdown.
That's one. If it jumps to like one or like 2.5, then maybe look at Notre Dame. But that's another one like similar to the Auburn game where even if Georgia loses, I don't see it by a whole touchdown.
That's your standard like Notre Dame line where it's like, okay, yeah, I think Notre Dame will probably win that game. Oh, God, Notre Dame dumb fans have bet the line up to like way higher than anything makes any sense.
Well, I think Vegas tends to, like, if you look at the lines usually for like the most popular teams, whether it's Green Bay.
They're called public favorites.
And they tend to, Vegas knows what they're doing, people. Let's jump to the...
They know Notre Dame fans are, A, mostly degenerate Italians who do not watch college football.
The
degenerate Catholic races who will blindly bet on whatever their papist, their bishop tells them to.
Yeah. Let's jump now. We're going to talk about the two biggest games of the evening. Both start within an hour of each other. Let's start with the one on ABC first. Oklahoma travels to Ohio State. Ohio State, 7-point favorite. Give me Oklahoma. Oklahoma might win that game outright. I liked how they looked last week. I like Baker Mayfield a lot.
I think everyone is overreacting a little bit to how badly Oklahoma State lost last year. It's a different team. Mm-hmm. Like you can't just go, oh, they got beat by Ohio State by a million last year. They'll definitely get beat by a million again this year. That line's too big. I'm taking Oklahoma.
Yeah, I like Oklahoma too. Next up, Stanford. Your boy Southern Cal. You're gonna love this, Dan. Southern Cal's a 6.5-point favorite.
LOL. Oh my God!
You know what?
Lock of the week. Lock it up. Put a chastity belt on it. Throw it in the ocean. Stanford is gonna win this game. Houdini couldn't beat this lot. Stanford.
Yeah, that line will probably drop down to around 4. One would imagine by the weekend. Over/under is a 56. Give me the under. That's my lock. Lock that one up. Ain't gonna have no 50s. This is gonna be like a 13-3 game. All right. Next up are the big to me. If you're a godly man, biggest game of the week. Utah travels to BYU. Utah's a 1-point favorite. BYU's a favorite. It's basically a pick 'em. I got Utah. I think BYU got embarrassed last week. It's their third game in a row now. They got to be tired.
Yeah.
Traveling everywhere.
Just for people sitting at home, I tend to have a football game going on when we do these podcasts during the football season. And it just so happens I have the LSU-BYU game running in the background of our record. And just as you brought this game up is when LSU scored that touchdown in the first quarter where they had a hole basically the size of the Great Salt Lake to run through.
Moses-sized parting of the sea to keep our biblical tone.
Charlton Heston himself could not have created a bigger alley to run through.
But those are the Church of Latter-day Saints picks of the week, Dan. So which of these games are you most excited about? I'm really circling. I want to watch Oklahoma, Ohio State. But obviously, I want to see the Auburn game the most. But take the bias out. Put on the journalist hat. I want to see Oklahoma, Ohio State go at it. I want to see if Oklahoma can make it back, go to the playoffs this year. This could be their year. Maybe they have to win the national championship. This could be a playoff team.
Let me think. What's my game?
Wish are you just excited, like to sit down, have a nice drink? I'll be at the beach watching these games, so that's gonna be awesome.
I am looking forward to my beloved Pitt playing Penn State, the rematch, the battle for the state of Pennsylvania,
the battle of Sandusky's Bulge,
who truly reigns supreme, Central Pennsylvania or Eastern Pennsylvania?
Oh, damn, we forgot one more game. I'm sorry. Boise State travels to Washington State. Washington State a 10-point favorite. Is Boise going to be – are they going to turn anything around here? Or are they going to lose by 10?
You can never put that many points on a Mike Leach team. That's insane. Yeah. Give me Boise in the points.
I like Boise there. I think I do. I don't trust Washington. Washington State, though, that's a team I'm circling. This team could surprise a lot of people. They're probably going to get one win that's going to confuse a lot of people on the East Coast. That's it. Oh, I want to look at, there's no line, but I want to talk about this team. Howard, Dan, had the biggest upset in NCAA football history.
Famous last name on that quarterback, too.
Oh, yeah. A guy who did pretty well at Auburn. His little brother. Cam Newton's little brother, as he's known as. I actually listened to the end of that game on UNLV radio, thanks to the TuneIn app. Big shout out to the TuneIn app. If you can't find a college game on TV, but you just want to throw one on the radio, just know what's going on, you can listen to any college team you can think of. Probably, I listened to a Hawaii game in the night on Saturday, Dan. It's fun.
How did UNLV's announcers handle what was happening to them?
Well, not very good, and they sounded like they were broadcasting like us.
They're just using
like
their
phone. It sounded like two guys in a closet watching a game, trying to call it. It was not very pretty. And sadly, Dan, if you saw this, Hawaii's big jump to the stadium app had their game on pay-per-view, if you will, went horribly wrong, and you couldn't even watch the game.
Oh.
So, I think my searches on Twitter to find out more about this, the three Western Carolina fans that cared were pissed. And I don't blame them. You want to watch your team on TV.
I know of one friend of mine who went to they play in Western Carolina, you say?
Yes.
I know one person who went to Western Carolina. That's up in the mountains. It's close to Cherokee, North Carolina. She described it as hell on earth, and I would rather go to school in the middle of the ocean on a sandbar than ever live here ever again.
Sounds like she's pretty racist against the Native Americans. Dan, I know you're not a big NFL guy.
I know you don't like the engine people.
I know, Dan, I know you don't like when athletes get paid for their hard work, but the NFL season kicks off. We're not going to go into it too hard. We may revisit it later, a little bit later this month once the season gets started. But you have any thoughts looking at this NFL season? Like, anything that's jumping out to you that you're interested in? It's kind of an NFL outsider.
Well, I'm not the NFL outsider. Let's see. I guess the biggest thing is, can Dak back up his rookie season, or is he going to have that typical sophomore slump?
Yeah, especially now it looks like he may be missing it. It looks like Ezekiel Elliott actually will play this Sunday, Dan, and his second kind of appeal that they filed in federal court, we'll learn more about that Friday.
Okay.
So if you're following the Elliott drama, it's never going to fucking end. Just know it'll go on. You know what? I'm going to be biased here, but fuck you, Dan. I want to see how my Falcons recover. I think this team's defense is pretty good, and I think we're going to see more of a Denver Broncos-style bounce back from a Super Bowl loss than, say, a Carolina Panthers. If that makes sense. Plus, let's be honest, they have a lot more talent than the Panthers had. Anytime you got Julio Jones on offense, it's going to be hard.
That does remind me. I'm not a Panthers fan. I never have been. Fuck the Panthers. But I am excited to see if Christian McCaffrey can be the weapon Cam Newton's always needed on that offense.
I don't know if you've seen what they're – McCaffrey apparently has a separate playbook almost. That's how much different stuff they're doing with Christian McCaffrey this year. I want to see how they do that because the Panthers haven't been a team that's kind of well-known for offensive
– creativity?
Creativity. And I want to see if they do anything interesting because they've wasted most of Cam Newton's career already.
Yeah, the biggest shame in the world to me is that Cam Newton and Steve Smith didn't line up better, like career-wise, to have – like because by the time Cam Newton came on the team and started figuring out, you know, NFL quarterback play, Steve Smith was an old man. That's the biggest shame to me.
He was an old man, got cut by the team, then went to Baltimore and kicked Carolina's ass. So he's also one of the most badass old men. I actually watched his NFL story or whatever on NFL Network. Steve Smith's a badass.
Steve Smith is easily my favorite Panther. I always grew up hating the Panthers because I didn't like the idea of them existing. And then Steve Smith being on the team is like, well, I guess there's somebody on this team I have to like.
Yeah. I have two favorite Panthers of all time, Dan.
Wesley Walls.
Ricky Prohl, former white wide receiver, and my boy Ray Cruz.
Very similar players. Ricky Pearl.
Forget all about Wesley Walls.
Wesley Walls was easily their best player until Steve Smith in football in their franchise history. But Ricky Pearl, for people who don't know, from my city of Winston-Salem, went to Wake Forest and was married to the to one of the news anchors, I believe, of WXII.
There you go.
Yeah, based out of Greensboro.
Ricky Pearl, you probably, if you've heard of Ricky Pearl, you're wondering, I don't remember this guy on the Panthers. Probably remember him when he's on the St. Louis Rams, ready to show him turf.
And he caught that one pass.
He was like the slot. Yeah, he was like the slot guy.
No, he was.
Right?
He was like the fourth receiver, because the slot guy was Oz Hakeem. But like Ricky Pearl came on. Ricky Pearl came on in their like four wide sets and their five
Oz Hakeem backfield sets. If you don't remember Oz Hakeem, think of Mike Wallace but less talented.
Oz Hakeem was super fast. People will not remember him. He was so goddamn fast. He could not catch a cold. And he could not run a route to save his life. But they would just line him up because they had Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt, who were both like Hall of Fame level wide receivers.
No, he could catch things underneath.
And
I'd like to see a guy like Hakeem come around now in the NFL where like the passing is way smarter than it was, 10 or was that almost 20 years
ago?
Those
Rams teams were pretty advanced.
They were pretty advanced, to be fair, but it's just a different game. I'd like to see what they do now. That we've seen more guys similar to him, and then you look at a guy like Tyreek Hill in Kansas City, who is not the best receiver, but a guy like Andy Reid could figure out how to work these guys.
Just imagine what those Rams teams, how great they could have been if their coaching coordinator believed in the shotgun. Because Kurt Warner would get murdered because they were just like, shotgun, that's for pussies. And they would just say, stand under center. But everybody knows we're throwing. Stand under center anyway. And he would just get wrecked.
Then I'm going to make my Super Bowl prediction right here before we get out of here. I'm going to take the dumbest possible Super Bowl maybe. Pittsburgh and Minnesota. The game will be played in Minnesota. Minnesota will be the first team to play in the city that's hosting, play in its own home stadium for the Super Bowl, and they will lose to Pittsburgh. Roethlisberger wins, goes out like a champion, retires, and goes to rape all the college women he wants.
First of all, why is there a Super Bowl in Minnesota?
They have a closed stadium, and Minneapolis is trying to be like, hey, we're a cool town.
What I find very, very funny, and mostly because I like shitting on the Carolina Panthers and the city of Charlotte in general, is that Minnesota will now have hosted two Super Bowls, and Charlotte has never hosted one.
To be fair, Minnesota spent the money on a stadium. And Dan, I want to come back to some clapback you threw it by Atlanta Falcons, my city of Atlanta, for their stadium deal. You know how much the city of Atlanta kicked in to the new stadium?
How much?
Well, of a stadium that cost $1.4 billion, city of Atlanta only kicked in $200 million. They're going to make that back on a Super Bowl, baby. God bless Atlanta, and God bless Arthur Blank. How about that?
There you go. Well, God bless them. And God bless robot anuses.
But you know what? Really, did you like what you saw at the stadium, Dan? What you saw on TV this weekend?
On TV, pretty cool build. On TV, all stadiums look the same. Unless you're like the Tampa Bay Rays baseball stadium where everybody can see the turf coming up. When a guy takes a step and a piece of turf comes off with him.
No, the best Dan to me was Raymond James when I had like the big Buccaneer cannon back there. Even when the Super Bowl's going on, there's a goddamn pirate ship in one of the end zones.
You could always tell that the Oakland still plays in that dump, don't they? Tell that the Oakland Raiders / Oakland A's stadium is the biggest piece of crap on earth.
Weirdly, like a cow field in the middle of it. I think there's some corn growing. Which I don't even think grows naturally in Oakland. It's really weird there.
Oakland's a blue collar town.
Yeah. Before we get out of here, do you have the FU of the week?
FU of the week. Who will it be?
I'll go first.
You go first.
Come on, WWE, making your workers work on Christmas Day and New Year's Day. When you make them work every other fucking day of the week, I hope those guys unionize.
Oh,
fuck,
man.
Fuck you, Vince McMahon. Fuck off.
All for a show that will do a 1.3 rating.
No, in a show that literally there's no big drop when it's taped and no one cares. Because you know what? Christmas night, people are watching Home Alone 2. They're watching NBA basketball.
No one is going to watch.
They might even watch NFL football.
Yeah, no one is going to watch.
The dumbest argument to me with this, Dan, is when people are like, well, the NBA players play on Christmas Day. Yeah, they also get the whole fucking summer off. Like, these wrestlers, what are they wrestling, like 3 days a week? They're fucking working it 4 or 5 days a week. They're on the fucking road. And you're not going to give them goddamn Christmas?
But yeah, if you want to give me 3 months off, yeah, I'll work whenever you want me to.
Yeah, but I hope they strike. They should strike before WrestleMania next year. That'd be awesome. That's always been my dream.
Jesse Ventura almost led a strike in the 80s, and then Hulk Hogan ratted it out.
There's no, you know, let's hope Roman Reigns is the guy starting again.
Roman Reigns tried to strike Big Goat, thank God. He's the worst possible union leader humanly possible.
He's the guy who could get it done.
Fuck you of the week from me. We'll talk about this on a future bullpen, but East Carolina's AD. Yeah, good job, man. You fired an alumni as your head coach, Ruffin McNeil. And your program has become a total disaster area. You fired Seth's baseball coach, you know, the guy who recruited him to East Carolina. You fired him too, and last year your baseball team lost 14 games in a row and lost to Campbell and Elon. And Seth will go off on that on a future episode because he's got a lot of opinions. But holy crap, that I cannot believe anybody could screw up that badly and not immediately be shot into space.
There you go.
Hey, Mitch. What do you think about doing a bullpen this week?
I think it'd be a great idea.
Man, your voice really changed. Let's kick it to the bullpen and take it away, me. And welcome, everybody, to everybody's favorite weekly segment. The segment where we call it down in a pen. We get on that weird phone that's still attached to a cord, even though no phones look like that anymore. And we say, come on down. We want a right-hander. We call for Seth Simmons in the bullpen. Seth, how you doing?
Doing great. And that's a question I've not asked yet, is why the hell have we not gone to iPhones in our bullpen yet?
I would guess it's literally like we don't want to deal with the power running out. Like we don't want to deal with charging anything.
Sure. Yeah, okay. Even though in all of minor league baseball, that's how we get our guys going.
With an iPhone?
There's a lot of places that you play that do not have bullpen phones, so it's either an iPhone or a walkie-talkie, and the walkie-talkie sucks.
The walkie-talkie's literally like, I can't, and you have no idea what he's even saying.
What'd you say there? Can you hit me back with that, please?
Please, man, I need Seth Simmons!
Alright, I don't know what you're saying, I'm just gonna get everybody
I heard Seth Simmons, so we're gonna go with... Just in case, Seth, you're going to get loose, and this guy, this lefty, you're going to get loose, and the submariner, you're going to get loose because you're always getting loose. So we got three guys getting loose for two bullpen spots.
Yeah, I mean, he said, sir, sir, that might have been submarine. I mean, there's all I heard was an S. Who knows?
Yeah,
we did hear Seth Simmons or the submariner.
We heard one name, we heard a submarine, and we heard a lefty. So here we go. We're getting three guys ready for two mounds.
I do like that. I do like the trend in baseball where it's like we need a relief pitcher for literally every single at-bat of the end of the game.
I'm not going to lie. When I was in high A, that has happened to me before. We had three guys getting loose on two mounds, so we would take turns. One guy that was the definite in case we got to the next inning, so he just kept getting loose the whole time. And then the other guys – well, actually, sorry. The one guy that was the definite – that was for the next inning would switch off with our like specialist. So like the specialist doesn't need to get ready, or doesn't need as much time to get ready. So those two would switch off for the guy that was, hey, we might need you in here to finish this inning. So there was plenty of times that I was over there throwing to the side and looking to my right and going, all right, the lefty specialist throws one and then the submariner throws the next one. And here we go.
Well, I can't imagine why games are 27 hours long. I can't imagine.
Never. Absolutely never.
But, switching topics violently, let's talk about another team you used to play baseball for. A simpler team. A simpler time. Let's talk about your alma mater, East Carolina. What is up with East Carolina? What is going on?
Where do I start, man?
I guess before we go in, we gotta give them some background on East Carolina, because everybody else in the country may not be as familiar.
So ECU's just that place that we've talked about before. It's a little bit more of a, I don't know, it's more of a pride thing than the Appalachian State and places like that. It's just, you got certain areas of the country areas of the state that are just more so, honed into ECU. It's the best way I can explain it. It's the, Fresno State of the East. We used to take down big time teams in two sports mainly. It was baseball and football. And
I think the best way to describe it is, I think a lot of people who haven't been to North Carolina don't realize just how big North Carolina is geographically, and that our state is, it's not like we're Texas. It's not like we're California. But we're closer to that than, like, Georgia. We're closer to that than, like, Alabama. In the sense that we have a state that has these big geographical differences. And there are cultural differences when you cross the state. So I think the best comparison I could make to East Carolina is, like, Texas Tech. Which is out in, like, West Texas. And it's kind of geographically cut off from, like, Austin and Houston and Dallas and San Antonio. It's over there on its own thing, and the soil is different, you walk around outside and it's just different out there. If you're from that part of the state where just you walk around outside and the weather's is similar to Greenville, everything about just where you grow up, East Carolina sort of reminds you more of home, and a lot of kids gravitate to East Carolina because it's like being home.
Yeah, I'll agree with that 100%. ECU is more like a small-time Clemson. Clemson is, in the middle of nowhere, just one of those kind of places that you just run into. ECU is the same way, except Clemson has a ton of more success than ECU has ever had. And I just feel it's like – and I feel like, when I visited Clemson as a recruit in high school, I got the same feel from ECU and Clemson. It's just I knew what the difference was. Clemson is a big-time program. ECU is one of those, smaller D1 programs. But, for me picking a school, I knew that if I went to ECU, I was going to play immediately. So that's why I picked ECU. Plus, the coaches there, I really like the coaches there. But for ECU, for me, it's exactly what you talk about. I felt like I was at home. I was 3 hours away from home, but I felt like I was back in Louisville, North Carolina, and just ran into where I went to school.
Yeah. It's not like being in Raleigh or, like, Chapel Hill, which is, like, this own weird – there's no other place really like Chapel Hill in the state. It's, like, a weird bubble of whatever they do there. And then Raleigh is like a state capital, and so it's just like I went to NC State. I can tell you this: NC State's like college culture is all screwed up because we basically just live in the middle of like a constant construction zone. So like,
ECU is like being what me and you grew up in. That's what basically like being ECU was, except the fact that you didn't have your parents around and you didn't have. Adult figures around to like watch over you at 24/7. You were basically on like a summer camp the whole time. And that's the best way I can explain ECU is it was a lot of fun. I had a great time at ECU.
Because we're going to have some criticisms coming yet. I want everybody who listens to the show, especially if you're an ECU person, Seth loved the shit out of East Carolina and loved the shit out of being at East Carolina.
So I think that's what people don't know is that I committed to NC State out of high school and then I decommitted and went to ECU because I honestly made the wrong decision.
We're not going to go into all the things that went into you making that bad decision. We'll leave that out. But
we'll leave that for another day.
But part of the thing is also that's unique about East Carolina, and if you don't live in the South, and we have a lot of listeners who don't live in the South, there's a thing throughout the South of schools whose best sport is baseball, that are primarily a baseball school, I think. And a lot of them also play football. It's not like they don't care about football. But baseball is the prime sport that really brings brings like pride to the school. You know, you got schools like East Carolina. You got a school like UNC Wilmington, Coastal. Carolina. Really, until Steve Spurrier, South Carolina
was
more of a baseball school than than anything else.
And then now that they have his name in basketball, they turned into a powerhouse.
Yeah, like UAB used to have a really good baseball program at one point. Tulane used to be pretty decent at baseball, and they're bad at everything else. Rice is the number one example always because their school sucks at all athletics other than baseball.
Shout out to Todd Glazeman. His brother Sam Glazeman is the quarterback at Rice. Shout out. I played with Todd Glazeman in baseball. So
hey, look.
Shout out.
I mean, I don't think it's me being an ass to shit on Rice when like in the 60s, John F. Kennedy's big David versus Goliath speech was, well, every year Rice has to play Texas and they do it anyway, even though they know they're not going to win. So like Rice has been bad at football for like 70 years.
Yeah. So ECU for me, like it hits hard, man. Like I went there as it ended up being my second school. Like when I decided to make my commitment to NC State, the team I had to turn down was ECU. And then when I decided to decommit, the first team I called was ECU. So ECU owns a special place in my heart. Not just because I went there, it's just I love that place. I spent, you know, three off seasons there when I got to Pro Bowl, just because of how much I love that place. I love training there. I love the people that I was around. I loved my head coach. So, you know, that place, it's home. It literally is my second home. So what I'm seeing
so getting right that now, all out of the way, it's Shitsville.
Oh my god. Oh phew. It is absolutely a dumpster fire. It is the Cleveland Browns of college sports.
So I think it's also important to note the only real reason East Carolina was able to get into the American Conference, like the big difference between East Carolina and let's say Marshall or Southern Miss. UNC Charlotte's not good at anything else. But, like, what's the big thing that is the reason why East Carolina is sitting in the American Conference instead of being stuck in the Conference USA with all the other schools that got left behind? Or, you know, those schools like Old Dominion who the Conference USA took just because, like, well, we got to replace. The reason why East Carolina is sitting in the American is because at the time the American was being formed, East Carolina athletics was awesome.
Yes.
And to see us to be just a few years down the road and to see like the complete collapse of the East Carolina athletic department in this total fashion is stunning. And it has a lot – I can tell you this for a fact. A lot of schools in the American Conference are kind of pissed off that they've got – I mean, because Greenville is not the easiest place to travel into and out of.
No. You have to fly into Raleigh and drive an hour and a half.
Like – there's a lot of schools, especially like the people at South Florida, you know, in Tampa, who complain basically about everybody in the American Conference because they think they're too good to be in it. But, you know, schools like that are constantly complaining about the fact that, you know, a school like East Carolina is in the same conference with them and they've got to make all these travel arrangements and then they're not even any good. You know, that's the position East Carolina is in because of the market it's in, because it's not a big TV market. Because it's not easily accessible travel-wise, they have to be good. They can't afford to be a bad team the same way that Temple. Temple can be crap, and everybody will put up with them because they're in Philadelphia.
100%.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah. I got nothing to disagree with you on that because they have to be good. And this notion that ECU fans have, that's the other problem with ECU is that these notion that they think that all of a sudden they're a Power 5 team, it needs to be thrown out the window. So let's not get into the fact that we think that the reason we're talking about ECU is because, yes, when I was in school, we had a guy like Chris Johnson, and we had a good quarterback after I left. We had a guy like Justin Hardy and a guy like Zay Jones after I left, but those are singular players. We're not talking about Power 5 conferences that draft out multiple players. So let's just go ahead and throw that out the window. But yes, for the conference that we were put into with the American, we were good when we walked into that conference. We were good when we got to that conference. We've been bad ever since. And my opinion is because of the firing of Ruffin McNeil.
Yeah. And let's even before we get to Ruffin, he was not the first guy. We got to talk about this man. Jeff Comfer. I just watched Spectre the other day. I didn't get around to seeing it when it came out. I finally watched it. And now I'm obsessed with the phrase, I am the author of your pain. Jeff Comfer is the author of my pain. Yes.
Yes. He is.
So the first before he fired Ruffin McNeil, he fired somebody else. A man by the name of Billy Guy.
The all-time winningest coach in ECU baseball history. The guy that, you know, I'll give you a little background on his info. He was a private school head coach in baseball in Cary and an AD. And then he got the pitching coach job at Lewisburg Community College.
And for people who don't know, Lewisburg Community College has been a baseball powerhouse for as long as I can remember, right? Like, as far as JUCO
until he left.
But he was there with the UNC coach. The UNC coach was his head coach there, right?
No, that was at North Carolina Wesleyan. North Carolina Wesleyan was his head coach. He took the AD job / pitching, head coach job at a high school after that. And then he got offered the pitching coach job because he's good at what he does at Lewisburg. Well, the Lewisburg head coach then took a head coaching job, I can't remember where, immediately after he signed on to be the pitching coach at Lewisburg. So then he interviewed, and they thought he interviewed so well that they gave him the head coach job at Lewisburg. All they did was go to, like, 3 World Series, and he had countless guys drafted and countless recruits go to D1 schools. Yeah, he didn't suck there. Let's just put it that way.
Mm.
And then he got – so let's just say, and he'll tell you this, is that he kind of fell into his couple jobs. The next job he took was the pitching coach job at ECU, and then Randy Mazey was the pitching coach at ECU, and he was fired for countless things.
We don't need to itemize them. We don't need to itemize any of that,
but he was fired for that. Coach Godwin then interviewed again, and they thought he did such a great job interviewing. So obviously he's a great interviewer, and they gave him the head coaching job. That year and my junior year are the only 2 years he's not made it to a regional in 10 years. They told him when he was fired that he couldn't recruit, even though he's got, like, I think 7 or 8 guys in the big leagues right now. He recruited Mike Trout, recruited Jeff Hoffman, recruited Mackenzie Gore, who is the number one pick for the Padres, got $6.7 million. Told him he couldn't recruit.
That's rough.
a little rough. So they parted ways. It wasn't really a firing. They parted ways. And the next thing you know, the minute after they parted ways, the Yankees come calling this guy saying, hey, we want you to be one of our best scouts. So obviously,
so the guy who doesn't know talent, apparently, is now a scout. Huh.
Yeah, that guy who doesn't know talent is now a scout. His first 2 draft picks are in AAA. I want to say one of them's in the – 1 or 3 of his first 3 draft picks is in the big leagues already. So the guy that doesn't know talent, he's already got 1 guy in the big leagues. He's got 7, 8, can't remember exact number if you let me think about it for a while. seven or eight guys in his tenure at ECU are in the big leagues. He's got the all-time wins leader in a conference history. He's got the all-time saves leader in a conference history.
A guy by the name all-time, of Seth Simmons, by the way.
The all-time appearance leader in a conference history. And that just, to me, just screams this guy had an agenda when he walked in, the AD. So he fired him.
And I'd just like to say, well, just because you made a firing and you fired a good coach, hey, maybe this guy has a great eye for head coaching talent. Maybe the guy he replaced Coach Godwin, well, I gotta say Coach Billy Godwin with, maybe he's a great coach. I mean, what has East Carolina done without Billy Godwin?
I'll give him this. They went to a super regional after they fired Billy Godwin, but that was with Billy Godwin's talent.
Well, I mean, I'm sure they were able to keep that winning going, though.
Oh, were they? They have the longest winning streak in ECU baseball history. They got swept for the first time in three straight series in ECU baseball history. They kicked off what was going to be the best closer in ECU baseball history. And there's not been one guy drafted since Coach Godwin left. Just saying.
Well, it certainly sounds like that didn't turn out so well. But hey,
no, it did not.
Baseball can be hard to find the best coaches. The search firms aren't as helpful because, you know, they're not as well up on who's the best baseball coach. I mean, I would normally say a complete destruction of the signature athletic program at your university is kind of a bad move. I mean, if I was judging athletic directors, and I had an athletic director who came up in front of me who told me, hey, I just destroyed single-handedly the number one program on campus, which brings in as much revenue as anything else, and has a giant stadium that's bigger than every other comp. I mean, y'all's stadium holds more people than Carolina's, doesn't it?
It's legally? Legally, I don't think so, but
has never been full ever. I mean, I went to many of those games.
So when Carolina played Virginia in Grasshopper Stadium, the Greensboro Grasshoppers place for the ACC championship, like 2 years ago, they hosted 11,000 people.
Oh, I'm talking about Chapel Hill Stadium.
Okay, time out. That was for an ACC championship game. The record they broke was ours for a regular season game. So that's just what I'm saying is the people that used to show up when I was in school, they don't show up like that anymore.
Yeah. So
really don't.
When we talk about baseball, again, I don't want people who are listening to this conversation who may not – I mean, because college baseball is more of a regional sport.
100%. Like
if you're in the Northeast, y'all don't give a shit about college baseball, and you should.
LSU,
you don't have any high school baseball
Miss,
talent up there.
Arkansas,
you know, people in Michigan, y'all don't give a shit about college baseball. It's fine. You don't have any baseball talent in your whole state anyway. It's fine. But when we're talking about college baseball at East Carolina, and when we're talking about college baseball at a place like, and a little bit of technical difficulties there, but picking back up. Sort of got cut off there saying, it's a really big deal for an athletic director at a school like East Carolina, with a culture like East Carolina, with a history like East Carolina, to have royally screwed up the baseball team. That's a bigger deal there than if the AD at Michigan hired a bad baseball coach. Like, nobody's going to give a crap there. But at East Carolina, that's a big deal. That's a really big deal.
Yeah, yeah. And I won't call him bad.
That's kind of bad. They lost a lot of games. I mean,
I'll give you this. His first year there, he took over. They had to win their conference championship to get in, and they did. They did that. And then the next year, they went to a super regional, and then last year is.
It seems to me like we got a guy who doesn't know how to recruit or develop talent because he did okay with somebody else's players. But.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. We're there. I'm not sure. But, like, I'm just saying, like, I think the way that it was handled was absolute fucking bullshit. Yeah, absolute bullshit. The guy that was there before thought he was keeping his job, went into a meeting, and next thing you know, he's not keeping his job and his guys, and he's left swimming. Granted, he got a good job after that because he's really good at what he does. To just, like, let everybody know, what I hold my, where I'm at today, I don't get a lot of that if I didn't play for the guy I played for.
Hmm.
I don't think I'm at where I'm at today if I don't play for the guy I played for at ECU. I believe that wholeheartedly. I believe in believing in yourself and believing that, you know, you kind of, you know, make your own destiny type thing. You make your own movements. You make your own type of career. But if I didn't play for who I played for in college, that includes my pitching coach, Dan Rozelle, and my head coach, Billy Godwin, my hitting coach, Link Jarrett, who is now the head coach at UNCG. If I don't play for those three guys, I'm not here today. I will say that for sure. I learned a lot about baseball that I never knew about coming into school from those three. Mm. So I will give them that. I will give them that. But it's just a different – it's a different atmosphere, man. It's just different now. It's like – I'm not saying the guy that's there can't recruit. I'm not saying the guy that's there can't get the job done. I'm just saying, like, why the fuck the change? Yeah. Why? Like, you're not Carolina. You're not NC State. You're not South Carolina. Like, quit believing you're a program that is a Power Five Texas or a Alabama or a any other conference you can think of, those teams, a Big Ten, Ohio State, any kind of conference. Quit thinking that. Like, you're not that conference.
So here's the thing, and I want to build off that, because I will say this emphatically, as a guy who went to NC State, I will have no problem saying this. As far as culturally and as far as program-wise, I would say East Carolina is a better baseball program than NC State. But here's the big difference.
100%.
NC State has this ACC network check they get every single year, and they have this ESPN TV money check they get every year, which allows them to, if they want to do something crazy and aggressive with one of their other sports, they're insulated from the screw.
They can.
They can afford to be aggressive. If NC State went out tomorrow and fired their baseball coach and hired somebody else trying to be really aggressive and wanting to be, hey, we want to be a national championship caliber baseball program, they could get away with doing something and having it backfire in their face because they've got way more money to spend on a baseball coach than East Carolina does, because American Conference TV check is not anything. It's not even a percentage of what the ACC gets. It's not even a percentage of what the SEC gets. So the thing that is so crazy to me about East Carolina's moves they've made, and this brings me to the firing of Ruffin McNeil as their football coach, is that they seem to be under this delusion that, okay, well, we've got to do whatever we can do to get into the Big 12, and if anything takes even a step back, we're gonna fire that guy, replace him with somebody else, and because we just can't afford to not get into the Big 12, brother. You don't have the money to go through just a terrible hire. You don't have the money to survive, oh man, we really screwed up and hired the wrong guy and now our football program is ass. Because if this guy, Scotty Montgomery, who they hired, who was a really good, you know, he was a good assistant coach, he was on a good coaching staff at Duke, but, well, I mean, I'm not so sure. I mean, you're working for Cutcliffe as his offensive assistant. How much of the offensive coaching are you really doing versus what Cutcliffe's doing? You know, I mean, that's always tricky.
Nothing. You're doing nothing. You're doing nothing.
I mean, I'm sure he's doing a lot more of the recruiting than Cutcliffe, because Cutcliffe seems like he's not the kind to.
Oh, great! You did recruiting. You did recruiting. You did.
Yeah. I mean, it's just. I have a hard time believing you're all
it's
that
obvious.
Hands on.
And the way that our guys are playing right now, it is fucking obvious that he did nothing but recruit.
And here's the other thing that was a really, I mean, here's the other thing that was a real, made the Scotty Montgomery hire really curious, is that, and hey, don't take this the wrong way. I went to NC State. We ain't no academic All-American university.
You're not going to put me in the wrong position because I'm indifferent right now
but,
about East Carolina.
I don't want this to sound like a big slam, but East Carolina does not have the same academic profile as Duke.
No, they take anybody with
like
a pulse.
East Carolina, as an athletic program, in a lot of ways, one of the things they always made their bones on in football was taking the kids who maybe didn't have the standardized test scores or didn't have the GPA for an ACC school to consider. And it was
the best player that's come out of ECU is Chris Johnson. How the fuck did he miss Florida and, you know, FSU and places like that? The guy ran a 4.2 at the combine.
I mean,
how does that kind of thing happen? Obviously, we take guys that fly under the radar or that don't meet academic requirements or whatever. So I got it.
And when you're recruiting at Duke, the thing that people don't necessarily understand because they look at, well, he was coaching at Duke. That's only like, what, an hour and a half away, you know, 2 hours away? But Duke doesn't recruit locally.
Yeah, hour and a half.
Duke doesn't recruit the state of North Carolina. Duke recruits nationally using their academic profile. They go all over the country. All
right, here. Hold on. Before you keep going, I'll give you something. I worked out in an off season with Wake Forest, and they were all over this kid. All over this kid. I'm not going to name his name. Not going to name what position. Not going to name anything. And the recruiting coordinator came in, and one of the kids said, "Hey, man, what do you got about my guy?" Because one of the kids knew the guy he was recruiting. Top-notch, like, athlete. And we're talking baseball. I get it. We're talking baseball. Top-notch athlete. And Wake Forest is kind of top-notch academically like Duke. So the recruiting coordinator turned to this kid and goes, he's not a Wake Forest kid. He passed on a kid that would change their program because he goes, not a Wake Forest kid. So that's what Duke has to deal with. I don't care if it's football. Football and baseball. Football and baseball, they have to deal with that. Basketball,
a lot of high academic universities will like let things slide for basketball because it's 12 dudes. And they can always like rationalize, well, we're only letting 12 dudes in instead of, you know, 75 or whatever for football.
And we're only letting 12 dudes in for like basically half a semester,
you know. So, like, that's – and Duke, as far as football, like, they recruit all over. They use their academic profile. It's very much the Stanford profile, and Duke makes a lot of use out of the Manning connection that Cutcliffe had. You know, he was the college – he was Peyton Manning's offensive coordinator, and Phil Fulmer – I mean, on those Tennessee teams, Phil Fulmer was just a fat dude sitting on the corner clapping and, you know –
Hey, here we go. I'm really just riding Cutcliffe.
Yeah, just riding his defensive coaching. Like, basically, that dude was just riding his coordinators because his defensive coach ended up being, like, the longest tenured assistant coach in the entire SEC. He's still coaching in the SEC, although not so great at Texas A&M. But, you know, I mean, he those LSU teams he coached, you know, the John Chavis I'm talking about. Those LSU defenses were pretty damn good.
Yeah.
His Tennessee defenses were amazing. And, you know, Cutcliffe's offensive coaching was tremendous. And Phil Fulmer stood there and clapped. And then Cutcliffe went to Ole Miss.
Yeah.
And, you know, he got Eli Manning and they did well there. So, I mean, you know, Cutcliffe uses that Manning relationship. And Duke isn't a great recruiting team either, though. Duke doesn't recruit as well as Stanford, for instance. So – the one thing that you're
no. Name the last guy that's come out of Duke that has been anything.
Yeah. I mean, it's just I think Renfrey.
Yeah, it's not. It's like
but he wasn't great. Well, like he was just
but,
a guy.
No, so we've got ECU has Scotty Montgomery. I'm not a fan because even in his press conference after they lose to JMU,
okay, JMU's really good. That's not fair.
They lose. But JMU is really, really good.
No, no, no. It is fair. It is fair. It 100% is fair, because the reason why I say it's fair is because what ECU expects of themselves.
But JMU is a defending national.
That's
team.
Why I say it They're is defending fair. I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit. What does ECU? We've already prefaced this. What does ECU
the Big
expect 12. Of
they
themselves?
They expect to be a Big 12.
They expect to be a Power 5. Exactly. So what is a JMU loss?
I mean.
So what is it? If you expect to be a Big 12 conference contender, like a team that can get in the Big 12, what do you expect? You expect wins nonstop, right?
You definitely don't expect to lose to an FCS team, no matter how good the FCS team is.
Thank you. I don't give a shit if you think you're Michigan that lost to Appalachian State. You expect to win against the games or against the teams that you're supposed to win against. Was ECU supposed to win that game?
I mean, they should. I mean, East Carolina, if this hire was working out the way it was supposed to have, yeah, of course they should win.
That's what I mean.
But the reality was going right. into that game.
So, like, I'm not talking
going into
about,
that game. I thought it was going to be a surprise if East Carolina won it.
I took JMU.
Yeah. I mean, James Madison, and again, James Madison. East Carolina getting hog-mollied by James Madison was actually probably not as embarrassing as Cincinnati almost losing who did they play? One of the worst FCS programs in the country. Austin Peay. Like, they played Austin Peay and got outgained.
Almost. Yeah. Okay, so here's my thing.
James Madison, everybody sitting at home. James Madison would, if they were in the FBS, they would dominate the Conference USA. They would win that conference they wouldn't even lose a game. They would win the Sun Belt without losing a game.
Yes.
They would win the MAC without losing a game.
I understand.
They would win the Mountain West without losing a game.
Understand. Should they have gotten dominated?
Should they have dominated East Carolina?
That's my
given
question.
Given what East Carolina was before
That's
they made
the
a coaching
question.
Change. No.
Exactly. That's the question. Should they? All right. They can lose. They can lose. They can lose. They can lose to an FCS team. They're ECU. I don't care. Should they have absolutely gotten manhandled, especially on the ground? Like, this is the NCAA where everybody just, like, passes the shit out of it. They got manhandled on the ground.
Yeah. I mean, it's just...
Should they have gotten manhandled on the ground? Yeah. No. That's where I have a problem.
And
that's where I have a huge problem. That is a coaching
and
problem. That's a scheme problem.
And I just want to bring up this about Ruffin McNeil, because I got a mutual friend of ours, former ACC specialist Cameron Kleinard. He worked in Greenville at the TV station when Ruffin McNeil was the head coach there. But Cameron always had wonderful things
Absolutely,
to say about
he did.
Ruffin McNeil. Cameron loved that guy. The whole newsroom
because
loved
Ruffin
that guy.
McNeil, Ruffin McNeil. I'm going to say this right now. Ruffin McNeil was the fucking man.
Ruffin McNeil, like, rabid dogs would go out of their
everybody
way to not
everybody
hurt
that ever,
McNeil. He's one of the nicest people.
Everybody I talk to on the football team, because, you know, athletes talk to each other. Everybody I talk to on the team, they thought Ruffin McNeil is, like, father figure. Like, he was the guy. And that was the whole thing that got him. That they said got him fired was like the whole actual basis of the whole team. It's like, hey man, they're getting in trouble. They're doing these kind of things. And Ruffin was the father figure, like not condoning, but he was just like, hey, we can help these guys out. He was being more the guy that could be like, hey, we don't have to suspend this guy or we don't have to kick him off the team. I think I can help this kid. He was being more of that kind of guy. And that's what they fired him for. They said he wasn't under control of his own team because kids kept getting in trouble and whatnot. But it was like he was trying to say, like, stop suspending these kids. Stop kicking them off teams. I think I can help them. I think I can do what is right by these kids. And the kids that needed to be kicked off, I think he did kick them off. There was a kid that was kicked off the team when Ruffin McNeil took the job that was supposed to be better than Chris Johnson.
He kicked that kid off the team.
I think
that guy ran for 200 yards against West Virginia when West Virginia was ranked fifth in the country. Not going to say his name. He ran for 200 yards against West Virginia when they were ranked fifth in the country and we beat them. He kicked that kid off the team. But he would fatherly hang on to kids that would get in trouble for lesser than what this kid did. And it was like seen as he doesn't have control of this team. Oh, a guy that's that has one losing season in 6 years has no control of his team.
And I want to just point out the other thing about Ruffin McNeil. He's an alum. Like, he played on the Pat Dye teams in the 70s, those miracle Pat Dye teams. It was the first team to ever beat UNC. He was on that team.
He's from right down the road.
From Lumberton. He played there. He is Greenville, North Carolina, through and through. Ruffin McNeil was never going to leave East Carolina. That was his, he was going to be there until the Lord called him home. He was so happy to finally get a head coaching job, and he got it at his alma mater that he loved, and he was a very successful coach. He beat UNC, twice, three times. He beat State two or three times.
Yeah. One of the times that he beat UNC, it was 77-30.
They mudhole stomped UNC at least once. I know they mudhole stomped NC State once, and these are the things that tend to judge East Carolina by. How'd you play against the big two schools in state? I mean, he did. He led them to their best season in school history.
He beat Virginia. And that was a season that he led the school in the best season in school history with coming off of taking the reins from Skip Holtz, who was on the verge of making ECU a BCS contender with Chris Johnson. That's what Ruffin McNeil
did. He took a program that had an upward trajectory and made it even better.
Yes, I will agree with that. He took a team that was, when Skip Holtz left, looked like it was going to be down. It looked like it was
going to
be terrible.
Skip left. Skip left for another job. It's like, well, this team has peaked, and it's time for me to go get another job. And, Ruffin showed up.
And he took him to a fucking bowl game.
And Ruffin is a guy with a tremendous amount of respect in the coaching world. He was able to bring in Lincoln Riley, who's now the head coach at Oklahoma. Bob Stoops, one of the best coaches of all time, looked out and wanted Lincoln Riley as his offensive coordinator and his head coach in waiting, for a reason. Yeah.
In waiting.
I mean, wanted him.
And then Lincoln threw Ruffin a bone, thank God.
Oh, yeah. He's Ruffin McNeil's now a defensive tackles coach for Oklahoma. Honest to God, you will never convince me that Comfer's decision to fire Ruffin McNeil, he was not – part of that was that he wasn't delusional enough that he thought he was going to be able to hire Lincoln Riley. You will never convince me that wasn't.
Here's my
thing
on Comfer. No, I can convince you of what I want to convince you of. It doesn't matter. I think Comfer's whole ideal on hiring coaches is he wanted to hire a guy that he hired and wanted to put his stamp on it and use ECU as a stepping stone, and now. I mean, that guy needs to be fucking fired. That is it. That is the I don't see ECU as being a Power 5 team or a Power 5 conference team. I don't see that. But for what they used to be, they're not even close. You got absolutely obliterated by James Madison. We've talked about it. James Madison's good. James Madison is one of the better FCS teams. I got it. But ECU should at least have made that a game.
And Ruffin McNeil's East Carolina would have. I mean, that's the reality.
Would have made that a game. If they lost, big deal. They would have made it a game. Comfer needs to go. That guy is a cancer. He sucks at his
job. Some people don't like it when you call for coaches or presidents or GMs or athletic directors.
No, I'm not calling for
fired,
coaches
but
or
I'm
president.
I'm
calling
I'm,
for the
AD. I don't know what else you're supposed to do with a guy
who took over at a program and destroyed, in his time as the athletic director there, has seen two of their two big money-making programs on campus are now garbage. I mean, East Carolina is going to finish last in the AAC this year. East Carolina baseball is,
yeah,
you know, is going to be lucky if they don't have another losing season.
Yeah, I mean, East Carolina, baseball is a different sport. Like, you never know what could happen with baseball. So I hope to God that we've got it figured out in baseball and they end up being good. So, like, Comfort could look like a genius because...
Well, there's no way he looks like a genius, though. Because, they had the worst season in...
Yeah, because
even if they bounce back, they had the worst season in as long as anybody can remember, you know.
All right, that's just me.
I know. You're a hopeful guy. You're full of hope. But, it's just...
Yeah. I don't like... I met the guy, shook his hand, and looked him in the eye. And I remember turning to my coach, because my coach was there the first year he was there, and I remember turning to my coach, this guy's a fucking snake.
Oh, man.
I don't like the guy. I never liked the guy. I didn't like him. As soon as I found out he fired Ruffin, the day I found that out, Ruffin went 5-7 that year. And, I was so pissed at the fact that we went 5-7 with a good team. I still never thought in my mind we would fire Ruffin. I'm like, Ruffin's not the problem. We went 5-7 because of whatever reason we went 5-7 for. But Ruffin was not the problem. And then he fired Ruffin, and I was so pissed at that. And, and it probably stemmed from the fact that he fired my head coach right before that. But this guy has an agenda. And his agenda is to hire guys that he hired, have guys that he hired be successful. So far, both his guys he's hired are not successful. He's had one guy, so he's had the head coach of the baseball team make it to a super regional. He made it to a super regional with all of my head coach's guys. All right, call him a great coach. You want to call baseball... You know what baseball is? Baseball is less coaching. Baseball is all about the athletes performing.
It's about getting those guys on campus.
Football is
about getting the talent on campus and in the off season developing them. It's not strategic decisions.
Exactly.
It's not. It just isn't.
So the guys that played every day for that team that went to the Super Regional were guys that developed their freshman, sophomore, and junior year under my head coach. Plus, you've got firing of Ruffin McNeil. The 2 years that Scotty's been there, we've gone 3-9, and then we've gone 3-10, if you want to count the fucking JMU game. And Scotty, literally in his press conference, something Ruffin would have never done, was he looked in the camera and blamed his players.
That's always a sign you're in over your head and you shouldn't be a head coach, is when you start blaming your players for when things go bad. I mean, that is always, like, to me, the minute a head coach, and I don't want to sound like I'm Mr. Quick Firing, but if a football coach ever worked for me and I was an athletic director and I heard him blaming players in a press conference, there would be a conversation of, if you ever do that again, you're fired.
Blamed every single one of his players. He's like, we didn't do this, we didn't do that. How about you just take some ownership? You suck as a head coach.
Oh, me. I mean.
You're not very good.
Look, here's the thing.
Your biggest win has been against NC State, your very first game.
But he did manage to beat NC State, which says a lot about the constant funk that NC State lives in.
He sucks, man.
Across your ticker, when you're watching CBS Sports Network, because that's what you do. I do. I mean, I paid extra money just to get CBS Sports Network. When you're watching CBS Sports Network, watching the Navy game or whatever, and you see East Carolina athletic director parts ways with East Carolina, this show will be you can go back and listen to this show and find out why this is a disaster. And yes. It's there's no way around it. They've got to go in a different direction from the athletic director. They just got to. So
absolutely.
Finishing up this week, we've gone kind of long on East Carolina. Let's get into your picks of the week. These are Seth's picks.
These are my Seth's picks.
Nobody else. These are just his. You've got a couple of games you wanted to spotlight. Obviously, these are for entertainment purposes only. If you lose your house, tough luck, you fucking idiot.
Tough. Yeah, you're a moron.
Tulane Navy. I'm all about the triple option. These are two triple option teams.
Yeah, I know you
Tell
are.
Me what you got.
I got Tulane covering +13 because I got two option teams. Clock's going to run out, and there's not going to be enough scoring going along for both teams for one team to get up by two touchdowns. So I've got Tulane covering the spread. I think it's a touchdown.
I love that pick for just the point you pointed out. You know, people love to talk about, you know, Navy beat Army however many years in a row, and they dominated them. But go back and look at the scores on those games. Navy very, very rarely just beat the shit out of Army. It was almost always a fairly close game, and Navy always won. Because you've got two teams that are running very similar offenses, and it's difficult for one to, like, the whole, you know, you've got two teams that see the triple option every day in practice.
Every day. So if you're so disciplined on defense, who wins? Yeah.
And you got two teams, and neither team has a huge talent advantage over the other. You know, Tulane isn't going to be able to get much better players than Navy. You know, whatever advantage Tulane does gets counteracted by Navy having, you know, more discipline. Yeah.
I got a touchdown win. Maybe 10 points is the win, if that. It might even be closer than that. This game could even go to overtime. Like, I got Tulane covering the spread by, I mean, plus 13.
That's
a
lot of points. You're taking the points in that game. I love that pick. I didn't even realize they were playing. I love you for taking that pick. Next game up. This is a bit bigger, higher profile game. Ohio State, Oklahoma. The spirit moved you.
I got Ohio State just absolutely throttling Oklahoma. I think they're better talented. I think that they have the better offense. Lincoln Riley, man, I love you to death. You did wonders for me when I was at ECU because when Skip Holtz left, you took over, and we still won games. But I think Ohio State is the best team in the country. I think it's more than a 7-point win, so I'll take it all the way up to 10. So I think Ohio State takes care of business. I think they win by at least 10. Their defense is a lot better than Oklahoma's. I think they get some stops. I think their playmakers make plays. Their special teams makes plays. This comes down to a game. Like, don't be afraid at halftime or just after, like, in the middle of the third quarter. This is one of those games that gets, you know, one of those Urban Meyer games that, like, you're looking at. Like, hey, it's kind of like the Indiana game. It's kind of close. All of a sudden, no, it's not. I kind of see it that way. It's a 10, 15, 17-point game for
me. You know, I talked about it on the main part of the show with Zach. With Mitch Pump, I always forget what his name is now. You know, I already gave my opinions on that one. I will say, if Ohio State mollywops Oklahoma again, like, that's it for the Big 12. You know, unless Texas Christian has one of those seasons that they sometimes do, where they just randomly decide they're going to be one of the 10 best teams in the country. You know, then that's not looking good for the Big 12. Moving on to the NFL, a thing I know nothing about. I have no idea. You could be telling me that the main Rough Riders are going to be favored against the Mexico City Mexico City Chicken Fighters. I wouldn't know, but you're telling me. You know, you got a line on the Panthers and 49ers. Tell me all about it.
Panthers 49ers. I got the Panthers absolutely beating the damn dog shit out of the 49ers. That is a done deal, over with, lock it, book it, plug it in. Don't come kill me if they don't.
Who is coaching the 49ers these days?
I think
they've had like three different coaches in 3 years.
Shanahan.
Oh, the guy who lost the Super Bowl?
Kyle. Oh, yeah, that guy. So I'm going to say this. I'm going to say it out loud. Christian McCaffrey will be the difference maker that makes the Panthers a Super Bowl team.
I hope so. He's on my fantasy
team. Done deal. Well, lock it in. Anyways, that spread is nowhere near where it needs to be. Take the Panthers, all the points, take the over, take everything about that game. Panthers beat the shit out of the 49ers.
I hope so.
Cam Newton is back. Cam Newton is MVP form this year. Don't say he wins the MVP, but he is MVP form this year. It is a done deal. The 49ers are trash. They suck. Kyle Shanahan cannot fix the situation that the owner has caused there. It is over and done with. The Panthers thrash.
Okay. I love 49ers. That pick because I have Christian McCaffrey on my fantasy team. Again, I do not watch any NFL though. This is my NFL fantasy teams are based entirely on me picking rookies and second year players that I think are going to explode. And sometimes it works. Most of the time it doesn't.
Awesome.
But I would love to see that happen. But that brings us to our final game in your pick series, and that is the Raiders and Tennessee.
Tennessee and the Raiders. I got the Raiders blowing Tennessee out of the water. All right, maybe not blowing. But it is a +2. In Tennessee, I get it. It's in Tennessee. It's hard to win on the road in the NFL, but Derek Carr is the next best quarterback to step up. And when the next best quarterback steps up, they don't have down years. So, in my opinion, the Raiders have the next best quarterback to step up. That is my opinion. So, I am and what I've learned is you don't bet against Tom Brady. You don't bet against Aaron Rodgers. You don't bet against Drew Brees. You don't bet against those guys. You don't bet against Derek Carr. +2, they win by 7. Raiders against the Titans. I know Marcus Mariota is looking to have a breakout year, and he might even have a good day. Derek Carr takes it to the Titans this Sunday. Win by 7.
I love it.
That's what I got. Plus two is too easy. Derek Carr is a great quarterback with too many weapons, a decent defense to hold him off, +7. +2. I would even take that all the way to +5. I got Derek Carr winning that by a touchdown or more.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love all those picks. And I think that about does it for this bullpen. This has been a hell of a bullpen. We went long on East Carolina. We got some great picks in. Seth, as always, thank you so much. And now
we got Kyrie and LeBron and the saga next week, plus more picks.
It's gonna be great. It's gonna be great.
See you, bitches.
Let's kick it back to Mitch in the studios.
Holla.
So on that note, if that's it, then there's only one thing you can do. Let's play the music, Jason.